6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
I am Legion. 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 I am Legion.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And I'm Aaron.
And this is the Legion Podcast, episode 24, coming down the home stretch here. This week, it's our top three highlights for season 3, episode 5, chapter 24. What'd you guys think? Karima, what'd you think?
I loved it. I thought it was a great episode. Lots of bad things happened, but I still loved it. I just can't not love this episode. Even the worst episodes, which I don't really, off the top of my head, can't think of any, but even the ones that aren't the best are still really good.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, on first watch, like halfway through, I was like, where is the really mind-bending concept here that's just going to blow me away? And I'm like, well, not every episode's going to have that. I still thought it was great. It was a little more straightforward, maybe, but well done. What about you, Aaron?
I thought it was great, too. I think it was a nice escalation of the season. I gotta say, the peace, love, and understanding was on the verge of kind of losing me. It was something just like so weird and so bizarre, and like it felt like they realized that this episode was a little bit too straightforward, and they wanted to kind of like still flex that muscle, because like I don't understand the sentiment. And that was the one kind of like sour note for me. But other than that, it was real good. I really liked the thrilling kind of heist that Sid pulled on David. And unfortunately, it didn't actually work out. But because I was scratching my head like, man, is she just going to be oddly conciliatory, or like did that talk she had with her younger self make a big difference? Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh no, she's just doing the rope a dope on David.
Lured
that
him
was
in.
Nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole peace, love, and understanding thing, it was really fun and funny, but it also, like, when they do something like that, I always want to be able to try to understand it within the context of like mutant powers or astral plane or psychic projections or something like that. And this just seemed like the show suddenly turned into a musical like Grease or something.
Mm-hmm. And even then, like, if if there was an emotional through line, I felt like I could hang on to. But I don't know. Maybe that's the point. Is like it's a kind of a melancholy song. The juxtaposition of its lyrical content versus what we just saw. I mean, I feel like I'm answering my own questions, but it's still like. You know, and that's maybe that's the other thing is like it's kind of false and fakey for David. But then, like, you know, when you've got the dead people singing and people with their minds wiped singing, then maybe that is actually kind of fits. But it's just like one of those things where it's like, man, if you have to spend 15, 20 minutes thinking, why the hell did they do that? Maybe they didn't do everything they needed to do to set it up, but. Like I said, I don't want to harp on the one thing I didn't like.
Well, I do want to talk about it a little bit more because I had to think about it too. Like, whoa, what is this? What is this all about? And I didn't copy down all the lyrics, but I feel like it's a manifestation of David's mindset. Like his whole thing is he feels like he's going to go back in time and fix the world first, starting by fixing himself. And then he's going to be this like self-actualized version of himself. And then he's going to spread peace, love, and understanding all around the world. And why is everybody giving me grief about this? I have, you know, really good intentions here. So I think that's kind of what it was.
And, okay, that makes sense. I'll buy it.
I'm not 100% sure on that, but that's what I would think. Okay, let's get into our top three, Rima.
So I'm just going to start off, Aaron, you kind of mentioned it already when you talked about Cid and how she was able to kind of manipulate David, which I, you know, should have seen coming. I feel like I should have just seen that as we see her, but like before David comes to her and she's sitting in her room kind of at, I guess, the window, if you can call that a window, I guess. And she removes her gloves, kind of like what you would do after a long day. And it totally went over my head until later. And I was just like, you knucklehead, I can't believe you missed that. But she totally took Farouk's advice or suggestion, I guess, about how, you know, a lover would be able to get close to David and be able to manipulate him. And, you know, she was resistant to that idea at first. I think she was just repulsed by that idea at all, you know, pretending that she still had any feelings for him when she clearly did not.
Mm-hmm. I think at first she thought he meant she would need to have sex with him, but then he was saying it wouldn't even need to go that far, but still maybe she wasn't totally on board with it.
Right. Yeah. I maybe she didn't feel she could either fake the feelings or fake doing that, or maybe she felt David wouldn't fall for it. I don't know, but clearly that she was not on board with that. But seeing as how he was able to infiltrate the airship despite the fact that they were in space, now of course Farouk led him there, and that's how he was able to find them.
I don't know why they assumed he wouldn't be able to do that.
I don't know either. I was confused by that. I thought, what are the limits on teleportation? Why can he not have this astral projection? He's able to astral project himself pretty much anywhere and teleport anywhere. Yeah. Why is he limited to the lower orbit of Earth?
He might be able to go to Mars for all we know.
Yeah, you don't know. Has that limitation been defined? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he could probably teleport from Chicago to New York, and that's a hell of a lot further away than low Earth orbit.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. So he's able to still reach them, and you know, when she's saying all of those words to him, I feel like she, to me, just from my perspective, and I might be totally wrong, and that's fine, or if there are differing opinions, I'm totally fine with that too, but to me, I was fooled for a minute until I saw her reach up and touch him. I feel a lot of what she was saying, almost she had, maybe she still believed some of it.
Or she's being like an actor who you find those feelings even if that's not who you normally are, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just sort of drop all the feelings that contradict them and just feel into the ones that are real.
Maybe.
Something like
maybe.
That.
Maybe. Maybe. I think that she probably could do that, because, I mean, a lot of actors do have to kind of draw from real life. Like, if they need to be really sad and cry for a scene, then they go deep and find something tragic that's happened to them that makes them cry. I think she was believable, but I think it's because she actually still feels a little bit. I think some of the feelings were real. Maybe not all of them, but I think she was believable enough that I think it's because some of the feelings are still real. And that's why she was able to get through to him and manipulate him and trap him.
Yeah, the most successful cons usually use a big dose of the truth and reality, and also the target's own prejudices and feelings of their, you know, and positive feelings for themselves. Like, oh, I can't possibly be tricked or taken advantage of because I'm too smart for that. You know, David wants to believe this is true of Sid.
Yes.
You know, he in his like his heart that like, you know, that she would accept him after all this, and that, you know, she's actually the one. She's just as wrong as he is. And, you know, she and the way that the kind of plot was convoluted, there is a little room to kind of see a little both sides there. But
yes.
Yeah, I thought that was really, and I also, I kind of with you, Rima, as I was watching that scene, I'm like, where is this false? Because I almost wonder if David had answered some of those questions a little bit better and not been so oblivious about, or just cavalier about changing the past. And, you know, the fact that like, well, if you change, if you go back that far, then, you know, we'll never have met. We'll never even notice. And who knows what all the ripple effects, the fact he's so cavalier and blasé about that. I think that maybe was a point of no return. I think she's probably going to do it the whole time, but maybe there are some things David could have said that would talk her out of it.
Right.
But, no, I think you're right on that. A lot of those feelings are really genuine, and she just had to change like the slight motivation, and instead of regret, you know, instead of the regret, she feels like more of a distant hope, and then that's all she needed to set the hook on David.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's and if on. There was something that he could have said that would have maybe surprised her and actually made her go, oh wait, maybe I could actually go this way. Well, he didn't say anything close to it.
So
he just has this kind of a douchey vibe. I mean, he said, I love you, and that was tender. And we even saw, you know, future Sid from season two when she sees David, and she you can tell she's like wistful about, oh, you are the way you used to be, and there's feelings there. So even then, absolutely. Yeah, she still has some. But yeah, as I was watching this, I started to believe her when David said, I trusted you. They're arguing about, you know, whether he left or whether she, you know, she's like, no, you're the one who left after he says she abandoned him. No, you're the one who left. And he says, I trusted you. And then she kind of goes, I know, I was jealous of myself. And that's where I'm like, huh, maybe she's good, man. She's reeling me in just like him. And then she's like, Farouk put ideas in my head that you betrayed me, that you were evil. And like Aaron, you were saying, there is room for some debate there. And so it's believable that she may have doubts. And that's perfect because you have to believe that David would fall for it. And so that's what made this scene great. But the whole time I was like, even though I was like thinking maybe when it did turn out to be a trick, I wasn't all that surprised. But when she was moving in closer to him, I was like, what is she going to do? Like, does she have a weapon or something? And I totally forgot that all she needed to do was touch him, which I love that I forgot that too. Because then when she does, it's like, oh, it just goes back to the very beginning of the show. It's a full circle where they switch bodies, but now she's using it purposefully as a weapon.
Yeah, I totally got just swept up in the moment. I think I totally blame because I love Sid and David. I really hate how they just can't be together, and I hate how it all went wrong. I mean, I know that that's what the story is and how it's going to be, and they're never going to be together again. But I was just so caught up in the moment, and I'm like, oh, Sid and David, and it just totally threw me. And she put her hand up, and I'm like, oh, no gloves, don't touch it.
It was genius, like, because you're like, how do you stop David? And it's right there in front of our, under our noses. Like, oh yeah, she totally has the capability to do something about this.
And the fallout of that is so frustrating too, because like, you know that there's a clock on this, and you know, like as soon as you become aware that David's or the Legion is inside him is starting to resist her, it's like the clock becomes really urgent. And, you know, Carrie's understandable confusion about what's going on and her delay at, you know, even Sid's delay about like, well, aren't you in there? It's like, I'll swap out. Like, at all those, like, man, if just a second here, a second there, they could have ended this.
Yeah. And the one time Carrie decides to be a little bit compassionate, it did her in.
Yeah.
I thought I really liked David's reading or the performance there that he put when she's like, did you kill everywhere? And he's like, a little like, it, but that's
of.
Like, it just goes to show you how how crazy he is. Yeah. Like, that's like the thing, you know, it's like we've been talking about like this in the context of Walter White and Breaking Bad. And I felt like, you know, this is like one of those episodes where, like, you know, you had a pretty low opinion of what Walt could do. And then he goes and abducts his daughter, or he pulls a knife on his wife. Or it's like,
or flips, you know, Jane over, or doesn't flip Jane over in the bed.
Right. Like there's this idea that, like, the ends justify the means, and if the end is you can go back in time and fix a life to be your perfect image, that's just a closed circle of madness. There's nothing that you can't excuse. There's nothing that you can't dismiss as just, oh, it's just temporary pain. And is it even real pain? Because the people that are hurting me and are against me aren't even real anyway, because this is all, you know, it brought me back to that thing that he said, the fact that, like, everyone that hurts me and everyone that hates me is not real, because in his mind, that's true. Because the real David that didn't get raped by the Shadow King wouldn't do any of these things. So they're hating some kind of weird, perverted, distorted future image of him. And it's just crazy. Like, it's like, this is such a... this is an episode that really just shows that, like, as much as you like David, as charismatic as he is, as much good as he wanted to do, and as bad as the situation is, he is a amoral nuclear bomb at this point.
That's true, and yet I've fantasized about having the power where I can go back, say, 15 minutes in time anytime. That way I can just go try something totally nuts and then erase it.
Yeah, like reloading your save game in Grand Theft Auto. We've all done it, sure.
Yep. Go back to the checkpoint.
I kind of get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, are you done with your point?
Yes.
Aaron.
Thank you.
I'll go something a little bit lighter. That spicy French bop that began the episode, that song was amazing, and it was one of the more memorable fight scenes. And, you know, we've talked about how powerful David is, but the way that he, you know, we've also got an idea that these Vermillions are fairly powerful too, and the fact that he just effortlessly dismisses them. He, you know, disintegrates them on contact. He forces a guy through the material plane of the bus and splatters him on the ground. He just mind wipes Daniel, I think is Clark's husband's name.
Yep.
That entire sequence just really shows, you know, sold you on David's power and also his capacity for, just really not just violence, but exceptionally cruel,
brutal
violence. Okay. So, like, I talked up front about, some of the quibbles I had with, like, I'm not sure exactly the show needed or had earned the peace, love, and understanding moment in this particular episode, but there's also, I had a slight question about, Daniel, Clark's husband, says, I can't be probed or broken because my mind's been trained. And then David says, oh, that's in long-term memory. Let's erase it. I don't know. Is that track for everybody else? Because, like, if he's trained to resist probing and all that kind of stuff, then how is David able to... How is it easier for him to delete that training, which involves probing and manipulating someone's mind? Like, if they just wanted to, like, oh, well, David's just too powerful for your feeble training, then that's the story you could tell. But it's like, that confused me. There's one other thing I found confusing about Farouk and a time-traveling wristwatch that we can talk about later or whatever comes up or whatever. But I was like, But otherwise, loved everything about that. Hate the Vermillion. Still hate the Vermillion redesigns. I hate that they all look like Larry Zonka.
I think about you every time I see them now. I'm
like, it's like everyone hates this. Yeah, I liked it when they had a little bit more uniqueness to them. But
yeah.
That's a pretty good point about if his whole thing is that he can't be manipulated, and then David's pretty much just saying, "Well, I'll manipulate that away then." But I guess you just kind of have to go with it.
It reminds me of, like, you know, kids when you play, like, freeze tag and they're like, you can't tag me, I got shields. Well, I've got shield proof tagging.
Super,
like,
lasers, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's not how Infinity. This works or how any of this works.
I guess it's more of a brute force thing rather than him trying to go in and, like, you know, change the person's mind. It's just maybe erasing it is a whole different thing, you know?
Yeah.
I guess.
That's kind of where I had to go with it, because I thought the same thing. I'm like, well, how are you able to do that? And I guess it's just, instead of looking for something specific, like instead of being able to go into his mind to look for something specific or being able to draw it out of him and yeah. manipulate him in some way, he's able to just go in and just erase his mind because he's that powerful.
So, and I guess the thought is like, if I can just go in and bulk erase the short, the long-term memory, then it presumably leaves the short-term memory intact, which is where he needed to get the, you know, where is the time traveler. But I don't know mm-hmm. that I just felt like the real reason they did it that way is because they needed a sixth scene of Clark mourning the fact that his husband's mind's wiped later on, and they kind of work backwards to get there.
But. Yeah, and yeah, they had them sense. Flirting around and calling each other Snuggle Buggle.
Just so you, yeah.
to remind you that they're human beings. So
it's just a twist of
tragic.
Knife.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then when he was going through the home videos of his, I guess, Daniel's mind or whatever he was doing at the end, and they mm-hmm. had the there's my handsome man. Like, cause I remember that, and that when it happened, and was that late season one or early season two? And how much I liked that sequence because it yeah. kind of really humanized
one.
A guy who was just like, you know, kind of a shitty villain.
A stock character, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that goes into my number three. I actually really love that moment, even though logistically it might be a little iffy with David and what's his name?
Daniel?
Clark's
Daniel.
Husband, Daniel. It just was so cruel and fucked up, and he just, like, in an instant there, just kind of ruined this guy's whole life mm-hmm. and Clark's too. I mean, Clark's
and
like
a son. They have yeah. a son.
Yeah. And just like it was nothing. And so my number three is about David's villainy and his narcissism. And, you know, last season at the end there, it really put me off that they went the whole sexual assault route with David. Cause I'm like, wow, this is just really depressing and sad and gross, and you know, up until then it had been a romance, and I thought, man, this is really I hope they handle this well, because it's a sketchy subject and important that you handle it correctly and everything. But now, halfway through season three, I get it now. It totally did send the show on another route. That was the thing that it took mm-hmm. to make you see David as, okay, he's a bad guy now, and he's still human, but he's super flawed. And it's the thing that it took to make you realize that they can't ever be a couple again. And they have not swept it under the rug. They really made sure that we know that they know what he did. You know, they're not minimizing it or anything like that. So now I get it. And I think it was good, given that this is a Breaking Bad type story, type tragedy story, watching the main character become the bad guy. In this episode, though, at first I thought they'd taken kind of an unrealistic Anakin Skywalker like jump with it, where he's, like you mentioned, Aaron, just kind of smearing this guy under the vehicle and shattering everybody and making people appear in space and all this stuff. But then when he talks about, oh, you know what, none of this matters because I'm going to go back in time and change everything, we're all going to get do-overs, then that made me realize, okay, that fits with what we know about his character. He just doesn't see any of this as mattering, and he's godlike, and he thinks he's going to fix the entire world, and so you just have to get past this one little kind of formality, you know, these annoying obstacles, and then I'm going to fix everything. So I think it all fits together really well once I got that perspective, then I realized, you know what I mean by the Anakin Skywalker when he's killing all those little kids? Like,
yeah, I do. Yeah. And I was actually thinking about how that's one of the reasons that Revenge of the Sith isn't as good as it could have been,
right,
even though it's the best of the prequels,
yeah,
because they do this hairpin turn on his character, but it's the same kind of delusion of like, oh, I can do this, and no matter what, you know, Padme will still, you know, she knows the real me, and she does this and that, and, you know, that he's so deluded that he loses sight of the fact that, like, you know, morality isn't relative at the end of the day. I also, it's funny because the other thing I thought about, because, like, this, I've been rewatching a lot of Star Trek The Next Generation for my, like, you know, just me time, when I watch, on the rare occasions I watch television for myself. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. there was an episode where, you know, the Enterprise C, the version before the Enterprise, got pulled through a time warp right yeah. as they were saving a Klingon outpost, and it changed the Federation's timeline to where they're at war with the Klingons. And there's this whole thing about, like, should we send the Enterprise C back to this doomed mission so they'll definitely die, but they will save countless billions of lives. And I'm like, it's interesting how much more sophisticated the audience is since, like, the early 90s, because no one even talked about the idea of, well, yeah, if you change the timeline, I guess, like, according to Guinan, it's better, but, like, we'll all cease to exist. And there's a little bit of that with the character of Yar, because she's dead. And
yeah.
But, like, everyone is, like, very placidly just, you know, assuming that, oh, yeah, we'll put this back together, everything will be fine. I liked Sid saying, do you think it hurts to be erased? Because that's exact. If you're talking about shifting the timeline, that's mm-hmm. especially in the kind of the way it works in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it seems, that's what you're talking about. Like, mm-hmm. whatever version of you is there is going to cease to exist. It might never exist. It's certainly not going to exist in the form that it was. And, right. you know,
right. like Lenny, being, she's yeah. worried about her child. But most likely, if David never becomes this washed up druggie who becomes a cult leader, then Lenny's never going to meet Salmon.
Right.
Right.
And she saw that he saw that was a hollow thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tried to pass it off right. as legitimate, and that's
but he was bullshitting. Know. Yeah. But an alternate possibility there is, if it's like, I mean, I don't think we're totally clear yet on what the Marvel Universe, cinematic universe, timey-wimey stuff, how that goes. But mm-hmm. I think they're trying to say in Avengers Endgame that it's like the comics. And even in Legion, we saw that episode where they were talking about the branches, and then it branches off here and it branches off here. Mm-hmm. So another possibility actually is, if he goes back in time and changes something, that it actually just creates another fork in the timeline and a new alternate reality. But this same reality where he's been causing all this suffering will still continue to exist.
Which is worse.
Yeah.
Because then it's like you're just hopping your consciousness from, like, a dimension that sucks to a dimension that doesn't
right,
suck
where
for you, but everybody else
this.
Is still... Yeah, it's like Rick and Morty. It's like, oh, we ruined the planet. Oh, we'll just go to a different dimension where it's kind of the same. And, like, yeah, but it's not the same for everybody you left behind. They got Cronenberg, so...
One more thing about this, you know, it, like, I started off by saying it seemed like they did this Anakin Skywalker, like, jump with him. But on the other hand, we have seen him go into D3 in season one when his sister was held there and just start disintegrating people. Foom, foom, foom. And mm-hmm. so he was already pretty brutal even back then when it suited his needs. So he's had it in him.
Mm-hmm. But that was definitely the Shadow King doing that, though, right?
I don't think so. Back then, was it?
I thought that was the whole idea. Is
he was under the control of
okay,
the Shadow King
yes,
as well.
You're probably yeah. right. Yeah. Okay. Scratch that. Reverse.
But it does show how to circle. You know, the student is now the master. The mm-hmm. circle is complete, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Because,
yeah.
You know, this season by like you know we've seen David do some fucked up shit on his own.
Oh yeah.
Steam before
and very
this,
Shadow King like stuff sometimes.
This
oh,
is just yeah, this is just cold blooded and cruel, the things he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Rima, number two.
My number two, we touched on it already a little bit. I just want to kind of talk about the short scene that we had with Lenny, R.I.P. Lenny.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell she's still really broken about what has occurred, and she's clearly not dealing with it. And I thought it was interesting that David just disperses. Not only is he killing so many at Division 3 and his enemies he's at war with, but he like just poofed and his own people were gone because he was just annoyed at them.
He's bored.
And again,
yeah. Enough of
yeah,
this.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm just, get out of my way. You're noise and I can't take it right now. I've got business to attend to here. And he just poof and they're gone. And, you know, just in a flash, they cease to exist. And of course, again, to him, it means nothing because, well, he can just fix it, right? He can just wave his hand and make it different and they won't be dead anymore because it's not real. But, you know, when he gets Lenny's attention and she is still really torn up and I was concerned, I saw this knife and I thought, surely she's not going to try to go after David, right? I mean, that would be kind of dumb because no way is she going to get anywhere near enough for him with this knife. I thought it was interesting that she called him a blockhead. So we had another Charlie Brown reference. Mm-hmm. Had some Charlie Brown references during this season so far.
I love it so much.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's a nice guy. I'm a huge Charlie Brown Snoopy fan. So that stuff just like screams at me and just I love it. But I thought it was really interesting that, you know, Lenny isn't drinking the Kool-Aid anymore. Mm-mm. And she's had it with David and just has zero interest in turning things around and not feeling what she's feeling. And, you know, Jason, you made a good point about, you know, that even if he is able to somehow go back and fix things or make things different, that, you know, Lenny might not be the same person. She may never meet Sam and they may never have their daughter again. You know, you never know. You don't know what you're going to change when that happens. And she isn't having it anymore, and she ends up stabbing herself, which was a complete shock to me. I was not expecting that. And I was really sad because I love Lenny. I think she's a great character. She was always one of my favorites in the show. And I was really surprised because I thought, you know, I guess I can kind of see why David really hangs on to her and why she's precious to him above like all of his other followers. They have, you know, quite a lot of history. And she has always been behind him and, you know, has been his sidekick and done anything for him. But that was also, you know, that was Amy's body. That was his sister's body. Oh, and yeah, I wonder if that had something to do with it, that, you know, it's kind of his way of having Amy alive, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I thought we were going to see maybe a little bit more of that. You know, we got that episode last season where Amy kind of comes out or like projects herself, her consciousness or something.
She moves in ways that Amy moved.
Right. Yeah, she had a lot of the same movements. I feel like even her physical appearance this season, Lenny's appearance, has kind of changed a little bit. Like they've done something with makeup to alter her appearance to
maybe
look like Amy.
Because in between the last two seasons, apparently Lenny decided she wants to be a little more straight and narrow because she has a wife and a child on the way. And so she's cleaned herself up. But maybe being in Amy's body might have some influence on that, too.
Well, they also change her eye color, too, to match Amy. That's the big physical change. Like, when she's wide-eyed or her, it looks a little bit unhinged because you're used to seeing Aubrey Plaza with brown eyes, and she's got these vivid blue. But I think they've also, like, permanently, like, shrinked her pupil. So it's like you get a double dose of it. But
yeah, they do look very big. Big and blue, and they really stand out. And I feel like her hair is even a little bit different. Like her hair's always been dark and had this nice wavy curl, but I feel like in season two it was just a little bit shorter. It was just past her shoulders, and once she inhabited Amy's body, it was longer, like Amy's hair. To me, that was a difference. I don't know if that's just something I'm noticing or if I'm wrong, but to me, I feel like there were some changes.
Well, I saw, I can't remember what blog it was I was reading last week, where there's a person speculating on like what happened to Amy, because there were a lot of hooks that it seemed like they were going to tease, like, you know, a battle for Lenny's body. And it's just that, like, when Holly decided, nope, three seasons is it, and we're stacked to the rafters, that some of those plot points got dropped, which, maybe, you know, that happens. And I'm fine with that, because it did seem like they laid some track that is now going to go nowhere. And I was also a little surprised that there wasn't more, because I was thinking the same thing when she killed her. I was like gasping, oh my God, this is a double loss, because it's Lenny and it's also the vestige of the sister. And like, David didn't really have that much of a reaction to it. So I think I was wondering if it's like maybe they've really dropped the whole like Amy plot line, or if it's just that's to just show how far gone David is that he doesn't even have that much of a reaction to it.
Well, he is, like Reem was saying, he cares more about her and seems more connected to her and will put up with more from her, although maybe that's also because sometimes people in leadership positions actually like it when some people push back a little bit. They respect them a little more. But anyways, that could be part of that, too, that he knows that she's in his sister's body, you know?
He did seem affected by it. Not, when she first did it, I didn't see much of a reaction. But then when she's lying on the ground and he's kneeling next to her, kind of cradling her, and she's says, looking up beyond, she's, you know, why is it blue? And I love that little moment, because that's, of course, a line that's, you know, carried out. Yeah, the frog.
And also the bliss juice. And so maybe that made me think maybe she's in death, she's in bliss or something.
Right.
I was going to ask, because, why... it's all. So is there another meaning to that too? Because David said they're going to war, and certainly it looks like they went to war this episode. And the last time this happened, the happy juice did turn red. Is there a significance to the fact that it is blue and David saying it's always blue?
All I know for sure is that's a callback to a line from season one.
Right. When they're
getting high. I don't know about the red, but I do think red represents anger and aggression and blue represents euphoria and bliss. But mm-hmm. as far as it's always blue, maybe that was just like a comforting thing to say.
They said it earlier in this season, too, season one, too. But, it's just kind of been carried out, and it's something that they kind of push in promos, too. Why is, hashtag, why is it blue, or hashtag, it's always blue, something like that.
And you mentioned she's not drinking the Kool-Aid anymore, which I thought was a good reference, because that whole saying is from the Jim Jones cult, right?
Yeah.
With the Kool-Aid.
And well, I love cults.
And I think, they're really pulling from mostly Charles Manson, it felt like, this episode, with all these young women around their daddy, and they call it the family, and they're using drugs, and they're, especially at the end when they're on the airship with the knives, it's mm-hmm. like they're ready to kill for him.
Yeah, Helter well, they Skelter. do reference in the episode with the squirrel that ends up escaping Division 3, and he's walking out on the street, and Lenny and the bus full of girls find him and take him in the van. The girls all are holding knives, and they credited those girls as Manson girls.
Oh.
So that's how they credited them. So I feel like that's you're spot on.
Pretty,
with that. Yeah.
Pretty clear. Okay, Aaron, number two.
Rima had my number two, but I got a couple backups. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about, speaking of David being powerful, David's confrontation with Farouk, because, it seems that, when he said a spider, not a rabbit, that he had kind of set this in to lure David into a place where, he was going to be vulnerable. And he seemed like he had David dead to rights. Like, it's like, even though David might be more powerful, that like if he gets the drop on him, or is the one that's able to get the initiative and the attack, that like David can't do much about it, because I don't know what he had done if Switch hadn't showed up. But I thought that whole scene was like the second he sees Switch and then his body goes stiff and he levitates off the ground. At first I thought, what the hell is he going to do? But then I realized it's Farouk. And the whole, you're my son. No, you're my cancer. And he goes, that's the temperament. It's your problem. He goes, no, it's your problem. And then Switch pops then Switch puts the watch that allowed David to time travel with her.
Is that what it was? I was so confused about that. I didn't understand how David got out of it and what the watches were about.
Yeah, that's why it's like, going back to my comments at the beginning, this is the episode where I think Noah Hawley really was playing fast and loose, because he probably had an episode and a half worth of plot to get to exactly where he needed to go, and mm-hmm. he only had 43 minutes to tell the story for whatever reason this time. He kidnapped Carrie to solve the problem of how he can get into time travel. The next episode, he has this watch on, and you're assuming that was that Carrie's technological solution.
Okay.
But now he gave it to Farouk, kicked him through the time portal, and now Farouk is stuck in a time between time. But
so somebody strapped that on Farouk, like Switch did or something?
Yeah, Switch did, then knocked him through to the time portal. But now David's able to use the portal without that watch.
Exactly. I had an issue with that, too.
WTF,
did they have an
man.
Extra one?
No, I looked, because first time I thought, it's like, well, maybe like, he did some kind of timey-wimey, and it's going to be, oh, well, I took the watch. I went back, in kind of like in the Avengers, I went back in time and got the stones from the previous timeline. He wasn't wearing the watch. He wasn't wearing the watch. So I have no, like, if they're suggesting that David's just that much more powerful,
right.
But there was that was one of the few, like, I can't explain what just happened from my mm-hmm. knowledge of what just happened.
Well, I know Noah Hawley's listening, so if you could just write to us and tell us what that means.
Yeah, legion@podcastica.com. We'd like to hear from you.
Okay, where are we here? My turn, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Lenny's death. We've really talked a lot about that, but I just also wanted to mention that she had such a rough life. She had her grand drinking vodka from a Rondo citrus soda can. She grew up as an addict. She was committed to a mental institution. She was phased into a wall by Sid, trapped in David's body. She was held prisoner in the astral plane by the Shadow King and forced to do his bidding. She was transferred into David's sister's body in what looked like a really traumatic event. She finally found peace with her girlfriend Salmon / new Janine and their unborn child, and seems to have gotten clean between seasons, only to have it all just fast forward and basically ripped away from her. And so when she did kill herself, it just felt like a fuck you to David too. So there was
I think it was
part of it in
and
there.
Aubrey Plaza, again, absolutely amazing work. And I'm sad. What is our feelings? Are we going to see her again? Are we going to see her either through a restored timeline, or is she going to be absorbed into David's consciousness, or mm-hmm. is the Shadow King going to do something with her? It's like, on one hand, we're towards the end, so people are going to start dying for real, or otherwise be exiting the show for real. But on the other hand, there's still 3 more episodes left, and I would love to see more Lenny.
I really want to see David go back and be successful in his plan, so we can see how it goes, probably very badly.
Yeah.
You know, I hope we get to see that. But either way, whatever it ends up being, I would actually be pretty shocked if we don't see Aubrey Plaza again.
I mean, she died in the first season and came back. And I mean, and there was I've just dropped it totally out of my head, but there was another character that died in season 2 and they came back. So I feel like there's a little bit of a theme there that maybe we haven't maybe seen the last of her, but I mean, Aubrey Plaza has just knocked it out of the park with this whole series.
You might be referring to Ptolemy, and the visual imagery him being absorbed in the mainframe is very similar to what was going on with Lenny at the end, where she was singing the Peace, Love, and Understanding. She had the roots growing into her.
Her fingers were like branching out and growing into the tree.
So that visual David's metaphor.
Little, you know, yeah, meditation place in his headspace.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that visual metaphor like so strongly correlates to what happened to Ptolemy last episode, that there is something to that. Her being absorbed by his consciousness, or somehow surviving in some sort of astral plane context.
Right. There, on this show, there's at least 7 or 8 different ways that she can come back.
Well, and that's X-Men as fuck, right? No one dies in an X-Men
property. They get better.
Right, yeah.
Okay, who's next? I'm lost.
That was your number 2?
Rima.
Yeah.
So, well, my number one, we talked a lot about it already, and that's just mostly David, how he went like full on baddie in this episode. Like, I feel like if you had any doubt about who he is or where he's at mentally, this episode should have snapped you, you know.
Or else you need to go find a cult.
Yeah, that too. Find yourself a cult, drink some blue juice, and call your leader daddy. You know, I feel like this episode left little doubt as to where David is at. And you mentioned it earlier, Aaron, I think in your number 3 point, David's display of power. And I know that he's doing really bad things. I get it. And I don't approve, but I love seeing his...
It was so awesome when he's standing
in the road and those Vermillion pass by him
shattered,
you know, like a finish line, you know, and they just shatter, and I was just like, oh wow, you know, I mean, it was like they were nothing. And yeah, I thought we were led to believe that, you know, they're not quite indestructible, but they went against the Minotaur from last season. I feel like we've seen them like in some sort of battle, and sometimes they end up in pieces and things, but they typically, they get put back together.
For sure.
Exactly. So, but it's cool to see him demonstrate those powers.
And I love how he like smears this dude all over the road, and then Daniel shoots him with a taser, and he's like, hey, That hurts. Mm-hmm.
It did affect him a little bit. You could tell he was kind of like, oh, you know, at least it irritated him.
Quit your whining, you asshole.
Like a mosquito bite or something. But I was a little bit just geeked out getting to watch him. I've always loved to see David when we first got it in season one, when he did go to Division III, even if he was under the Shadow King's control, you know, him just kind of snapping his fingers and, you know, everyone gets put into walls and floors and concrete. And I've just always loved his, because he's so powerful and it's just fun to watch, you know, a powerful mutant, whether they're good or bad. So that's just like, you know, that side of me that just kind of got a little bit of a rush seeing him do that, just snaps his fingers or waves his hand or smushes a guy through the bus and he's just a bloody trail.
Did you become a little more okay with maybe calling him daddy at some point?
Nope. Okay, no, I'm still not okay with that. It's just strange to me. I'm totally fine. Whatever
daddy,
floats your boat
daddy.
Is I'm totally fine with. I'm not judgmental. It's just not for me. But, you know, you guys made a really good point when you're talking about like how it all of this is like practice for him. It's to him, this is like a video game version that he can just, I'm just going to, you know, none of this matters. But he just can't see that it doesn't take away from what he's done. Even if he can go back and fix things and change things and make things different, make it to where Farouk never, you know, enters his mind. And as he says, you know, because David's the eternal victim, it doesn't change him killing all of these people. He's still doing it.
Yeah, that's a moral question. Like, if I knew that I could go back in time and change it so nothing I was doing now ever happened, then if I was causing people some distress, that would be one thing. But way on the edge of the spectrum, what if there was really prolonged excruciating suffering involved? Then it's like, the question becomes less clear. You know, if it's all going to be erased, is it okay that some people endured some really harsh suffering? I don't think so. You know,
right?
Yeah, we should all take a course in philosophy and ethics just in case any of us get superpowers, because boy, there's a lot of trolley plot problems writ large when you're dealing with time travel and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to see why David gets kind of corrupt with having these massive
Absolutely.
Amount of powers. I mean, I don't know anybody that would be morally strong enough to resist doing even, I mean, and I'm not talking like killing people or anything, but just to, you know, alter little things, you know, go back and alter
some
little
roadblocks.
Things. And just make things just a little bit easier in life, you know, I mean, and if you have all of that and there's no consequences for that, I mean, I don't know anybody that wouldn't, you know, kind of, you know, tilt the scales in their favor just a little bit and use it, you know, and even in maybe not the most wholesome ways. So, you know, I can kind of see he just happens to have some mental issues that just, you know, really kind of push it the other way.
Yeah.
So.
But billionaires are okay. They're never going to turn against us or act in our best interest or abuse their fantastic political and economic warping powers for evil.
Of course.
They're cool.
Right.
Yeah. What did Farouk say? Just trying to lure him in there. Gods make the rules, or
they don't follow them. That's right.
Yeah, you can
that's
do whatever
right.
you want.
Yeah, he's
this
just
is
feeding
all
it to him.
A metaphor for Mark Zuckerberg.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple. You can take your pick.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Aaron.
There's so many. I'm gonna go with the flying to space sequence because it was just purely comic book awesome. Like, and yep. I felt like I really identified with Carrie. We're going to space, and seeing that thing fire up and it turn off the props and fire the retro rockets, and then it. I mean, this is like really comic booky because there's no way in hell this could be realistic. But when they actually pierce the atmosphere and it goes through that layer, like I thought it was really beautiful. And mm-hmm. also the shots of the corpses in space kind of pirouetting around against the moon. It's just some fantastic visual imagery. And you know, like I said, it's just this was a very comic booky episode because some of the things they did with like David's face being superimposed over the action and the Farouk's face being imposed and the like knife welding Mansonites kind of like face, like it just felt very Yeah, it felt very graphic novel, kind of like auteur, and yeah. I loved it.
And
you're right.
And if they were going to do that whole peace, love, and understanding thing, my favorite was when the guys in space, their lips were kind of moving to sing, but they were frozen, so just a little bit. Okay, I really loved when all of David's multiple personalities converged on Sid inside David and were repeating, "I am Legion," because I just like that aspect of the character, and it ties it into the title. Like, we gotta figure out why this show's called that. So that's good. Now, in the comic, they used to be other people that were absorbed into him, but I don't know if that's what's happening here. They all look but they have different personalities, it seems like.
That's what I'm saying. I wonder if you're supposed to understand that, like, this is kind of his body count, because, like, it went from, you know, in season one it was Legion because he had, you know, Shadow King and a couple other those things in his head, but then in season two you had the British David. And then, you know, like this season, there was like two or three of them. And now there's just an army.
Legion,
I wonder if it's like either the time travel doing it or the body count that he's leaving behind is doing it.
I like the idea that it's the body count. It kind of surprised me that
books,
Shadow King.
Right?
Yeah, totally. Shadow King, even if he doesn't kill him, though, in the comics, if they're near him, but still. Shadow King doesn't even seem to know about them. David says, "You can't stop us."
Yeah, right.
Goes, us?
Right.
Who's us?
And that's interesting, because why doesn't, if he was in his mind for like 30 years, why didn't he see the presence or feel the presence?
Body count.
That's evidence that these are recent. These are something new. Like this is something that David's done remodeling his mind since the Shadow King moved out. Although I did see some speculation that maybe, because we know that Professor X is going to appear later in the season, that you might find out that somehow Xavier, like, sealed off these parts of David's mind,
because
either knowing that the Shadow King was there or to protect him, and that's going to be revealed, which I think would be an interesting possibility.
I do hope we get more clarity on what's going on with them. We did hear whispers in his head in season one. He would put his hands on his head like, "And you wrap this episode."
Right.
So that's the opening of our podcast is taken from that. So,
but
I don't know.
And I think that's a good point too. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but I also just wonder how much of when he's hearing those voices, if it's because he's telepathic and he's hearing the voices of the people around him, like he can hear voices.
Oh.
All sure. around him, kind of like Professor X, when he hears all these voices, and then he uses a Cerebro to kind of focus on this voice or this voice to find that person.
I
thought it was just he didn't know how to control his power to suppress those voices.
I like
that was my understanding.
In the Bible, by the way, which I don't know anything about, but I researched it. I Am Legion is from the Book of Mark, where Jesus comes upon a demon possessed man crying in these tombs. And he says, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And then he asked, "What is his name?" And the man replies, "My name is Legion, because there are many of us." And then Jesus sends the evil spirits into pigs that get washed into a lake and drown. So I feel like there's a reference to that, because they're kind of like demons. They're David's demons.
Absolutely.
All right. Notes. Rima?
Well, you mentioned it whenever Sydney is in his, I guess, brain consciousness, whatever, and she's approached by his
multiples.
She's
surprised by him.
She's definitely surprised and kind of freaked out. And when they said it, all I could sit there and go was, "They said the thing. They said it. They said it."
Yeah, I know.
I got so excited. I was like jumping on my bed, like in glee. I thought, oh my gosh, that's the first time that we've heard like at least even one of his personalities acknowledge who they are and that's who he is. Because in season two, it was Melanie that called him that whenever she was, I guess, under Farouk's influence and was manipulating Sydney and, you know, telling about how bad David was and he was going to destroy the world. And she called him Legion. And that was huge. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in the season one opener, we had the picture of David just for a few moments in like where he looked like the comic book version of Legion with the crystal ball and his crazy hair and kind of floating amongst pillows and pregnant Lenny and all of that happening. So that to me was just a huge moment. I just giggled with glee over finally getting to hear them say that and acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Talking a little bit about, I thought it was just interesting, again, Division 3, I'm wondering if they're realizing now, which I guess most of them are maybe dead, floating in space, if they should have trusted Farouk, since he right. decided, well, you're not going to listen to me. I'm tired of playing by your rules. I'm going to bring David here, and there's going to be, we're going to confront this head on, and he decides to do his own thing.
I couldn't tell whether that whole thing was a collaboration between Sid and Farouk, but I don't think so. I think Sid wanted to hide. Farouk wanted to confront David. So Farouk called him up there and he appeared to Sid. And so I think in the moment she kind of improvised and decided to do what Farouk had suggested. And then it ended up not working. And so then we saw Farouk's real plan, which was to trap him in the spider web when he tried to get switched.
I think that's another indication that Holly's doing a little bit of sleight of hand, because like, what's a good reason for Farouk not ambushing David at that, like, you know, particular time, like when he was at his weakest, when he was distracted by Sid, when they had switched bodies. Although I don't know that Farouk's goal is to destroy David.
I don't think it is.
I think he still wants his power.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't want to just destroy him. Or maybe even possess his body, like upgrade bodies.
Yeah. I feel like there's something, he needs him or wants him for something. I don't think he wants to destroy him.
We'll know in 3 weeks.
I hope we do. The only other note that I had, this was kind of a last minute ad that I had. I was just reading some stuff today, news and stuff on Noah Hawley, trying to find some interesting tidbits. And I came across a story. This was older, so I don't have this whole interview, but it's a quote from an interview that he had. And they were talking in the context of all of the projects that he had going on with Fargo, with Legion. He had his last book had just been published. So he's got all these balls in the air, right? And they're, you know, kind of asking him about, you know, hey, you've got a lot going on. You must be overwhelmed. And he said, I am a little overwhelmed. I won't lie to you. He says, making a new season for Legion is not something you just switch into. It's not something you do between dropping the kids off in the morning and having dinner at night. That's a retreat into the woods for 6 weeks with some mushrooms and trying to come back with the answers, but I haven't stumbled yet.
That's awesome.
I was like, oh, I love you, Noah Hawley.
That's not just a switch. I think he just confirmed he's using time travel to manage these multiple projects. He's
like, I know.
He's like Hermione with the time turner.
Exactly. I feel like that's the only way this man gets anything done.
I'm putting out a want ad for a time traveler today.
There you go. Anyway, that's all my notes.
You're on.
There's a couple of things I want to talk about. I got really excited when the mainframe with two other Vermilions plugged himself into this mainframe and Vermilion shaped holes and then descended into the ship and said he's going to resume virtual control. I'm like, holy shit, is this thing going to turn into like a giant robot? Is he going to have like some kind of like battle suit that he comes at? Like, what's going to happen? And nothing really happened.
No, it's like a Borg regeneration thing there too.
What's he virtually controlling? There's got to be something that we're going to find out, right?
Well, he said lockdown. So I thought they were just protecting their bodies and they were still flying the ship.
Okay. Well, that's not as cool as what I was hoping.
No, it's not.
that giant airship to turn into some kind of Veritech fighter from Robotech and whip ass.
Exactly.
We need a Robotech movie, by the way. I got to mention that since you just
mentioned time.
Veritechs. Yeah.
It's time. It's time to do some of the weirder. I mean, it's been, what, almost 20 years since The Matrix came out?
It's going
to
be
year.
Too late if we don't hurry up and get it.
We need we need to get some of the weirder anime stuff done. Okay, the other thing I want to talk about is, just in case you forgot, Division 3's a bunch of assholes. The way they treated Switch, you know, she had kind of like switched sides, but then they throw her into this nightmare black hole device where she's seeing herself as like a robot that's not under control, and she's got like this wind-up thing installed in her spine, and... You know, like, also, what the heck is David doing in this armored transporting? Like, I have a feeling that they're still, like, rounding up mutants and trafficking that way. And it's just, like, we've got David and Farouk, the Shadow King, distracting us from the fact that these guys are bad dudes in their own right and are not something to necessarily be cheered on about either.
Maybe. I mean, I think right now their main goal is to deal with David. so they're trying to be nimble and mobile and stuff. But I mean, you're right. They're very much just do whatever it takes to accomplish our goals. Yeah, but you said with Switch, I was wondering, oh, it looks like she's back on David's side now. What's going on with her? But the way you just put it, well, they just put her in this nightmare situation. So maybe that's why she decided to go back to him.
Yeah. You know, like David's like, she's losing teeth and whatnot, but like, you know, she was actually outside of a nightmare dimension the entire time. Although I don't know, like being locked in a black hole versus walking down endless time corridors, hounded by time demons. Yeah. Yeah. Which is worse, right. You know, but
yeah, maybe pick door number 3 on that one.
Yeah. She needs to travel back in time and tell herself not to answer that time travel ad.
Well, and we know she has an aversion to robots too. Just your point about that is that, you know, her, she talks about, you know, her dad building these robots, and she didn't trust Farouk because she called him a robot and said David was a man. The Vermillion are robots. Tanmi,
she said,
is
she used to
robot.
Go pretend she was one. She'd go into the room and pretend she was one.
I wonder
so
if they're
like
also
a manifestation of that.
I mean, this is all dream nightmare imagery, but it also wouldn't surprise me that she isn't a construct, and like that Dark Hint was the fact that she's got that wind up thing at the base. Like, again, that's not literally true, but I think it's metaphorically true. And her father's a brilliant robot designer.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know what that would do to the plot, but yeah. Legion World coming to season 3. You thought it was screwed up and didn't make sense before. And then finally, what do we think is his new time travel plan? Because she says, are we going to go back and do the baby again, your mom? And he goes, I got a different plan. And then the ominous chords came in. Mm-hmm. And then we got to see the time demons coming back. What is it? What's he going to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it'll have something to do with his father and Farouk.
I don't know either, but that's my thoughts as well, is maybe when his father and Farouk are battling, maybe either before that or during that. I'm wondering. I don't know. I think we are going to get Professor X again, though. So.
Let me ask you this, Jason, on Podcastica's official policy, is next time ons, are they considered spoilers?
Or I would say, let's just say we're going to talk about next time on for the next couple of minutes, the, you know, like 30 second or whatever it is preview for next week's episode. So if you don't mm-hmm. want to hear that, you should just skip ahead a couple minutes.
Yes.
All right. You've been adequately warned. So,
let's talk.
So next episode looks like it's all about Sid's childhood. And I wonder if what Sid used to kind of, you know, trick David kind of did ring true about, like, well, fixing everything involves me being with Sid in the end. So he's going to go back and do something to her past to either help himself or make her like resist the seed that was planted in her and the other like Melanie and other people in Division 3. Like, he's gonna attack it from that direction. Like, hey, I'm gonna give this person the tools to save me because I can't prevent the original sin, and this way I'll still get with Sid. I wonder if that's what he's trying to do.
That seems
it's interesting.
Kind of so indirect that it would be not guaranteed to work, you know? Like,
yeah, no, I mean, it's like kind of like maybe approaching it more obliquely is so crazy it just might work.
Maybe,
because, like,
yeah.
Going back and just trying to protect himself in the past hasn't worked.
Didn't work. But the thing about that didn't work is he just couldn't communicate well. He couldn't get through. And so given that, it seems pretty cocky of him to be like, oh, yeah, I can just kill all these people because it's not going to matter. I'll go back in time and fix it. Since he had a huge failure recently, but I guess maybe he thinks those wristwatches are going to help him with that.
The other thing is he's not going back to Sid's. I would believe that Sid's a little bit younger than David anyway, but also mm-hmm. like from the previews, she is somewhere in the 5 to 10 year range. So like maybe he's not going quite so far back in time. So he sees it might be perceived as easier to do as well.
Was Jemaine Clement in there?
Yes, they had him, and they also had the voice of Melanie.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Jean Smart. So I'm really excited about that, too.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how they come into play and how Sid comes into play, because we know they're stuck like somewhere, or they've chosen to be together in the astral plane, because they said last season.
They got tricked into it, right?
Well, I thought they were there by choice, because they said that, you know, that's where they could be together, and their bodies were safely hidden away.
I think so that's Shadow King trickery.
I mean, maybe there was really no explanation, because it looked like there was a little bit at the end of season mm-hmm. two. There was like a little bit of a time jump, and we had that little moment with, you know, that mm-hmm. closing moment with Jemaine Clement and Jean Smart there. So, I mean, I don't know, but that's just where they kind of left us, and that's what they said. So I don't know.
And it sounded like they were talking from the future, but yeah, it's like they decided to go into their own little personal matrix, which. Yeah.
But they also had started to forget their friends from Division mm-hmm. 3. And that's mm-hmm. the thing that I thought was the big clue that.
Sketchy,
Yeah, like so they've been, you know, manipulated, especially, who's Jemaine Clement's?
Oliver.
Especially Oliver, who is a powerful mutant telepath in his own right.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, I feel like it's like if it was voluntary, then I don't understand. If it's a voluntary exile, I don't understand why they're not a little bit more together. Though I guess Oliver in season one was pretty dreamy and distant too, because he'd been in stasis for so long. Yeah. So.
Right. Like 30 years. And he just, like, he'd forgotten who Melanie was. He kind of forgot Carrie, you know, because he'd been gone for so long.
So maybe that's more the easy explanation. But they're coming back. So it'll be, we'll only have an episode to see what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, because whatever the case, I thought that was the show's way of giving those actors an out since they might not be back. So. Mm. I'm glad to see that they are, because I wasn't sure we were going to see them again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Any other notes?
Nope.
Okay, let's see. You kind of mentioned this already, Aaron, but I love the line when David said to Shadow King, "You're always so good at that, using words to say things you don't mean." He goes, "Of course I mean them. You're my son and you're my cancer." I don't know. That was just a powerful moment there. Mm-hmm. I love that. What else? Oh, when Sid asks David what happened to Lenny, and he says, "She abandoned me," which is total narcissist way of making it immediately about himself. But anyway, he goes, "Like my parents, like you." And I thought, wow, yeah, he does have a lot of these abandonment happenings in his life. And I think that is what happens to people a lot. They have this core wound from childhood, and then it kind of repeats itself throughout their lives in different ways, and they're kind of unconsciously recreating it. Like sometimes the intense fear of something can cause you to accidentally recreate it. For example, if you're afraid of abandonment, you can be extra clingy and push people away or things like that. So just another psychological dynamic playing out with David.
Yep.
So that's all I got. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
T'es qui toi, t'es qui moi?
T'es pas qui, t'es pas quoi?
T'es qui toi, t'es qui moi?
Mais toi, t'es qui, t'es quoi?
N'oublie pas qu'avant toi,
y'en a d'autres que toi.
Et qu'après toi, crois-moi,
y'en aura.
All right, we're back. It's time for the news.
Okay, so we have a couple items today. First one we have is from Collider.com. This was taken from an interview with Stephanie Corneliusen. They asked her, "What made you want to do this?" And she says, "I'm such a huge Legion fan. When you work in TV, you don't have a lot of time to watch stuff, even though people think you do. They're like, oh, you're an actor, so you love everything that has to do with acting. And I do, but I'm doing it, so I don't have time to watch much of it."
This is Gabrielle, right?
Yeah, Gabrielle. Sorry. Yeah,
sorry.
If people didn't know who Stephanie Corneliusen was, she is Gabrielle David's mother. She goes on to say, "But Legion was one of the shows that I was really, really obsessed with. I remember shooting Mr. Robot and watching the first season of Legion when I came home at night. So being a part of Legion was huge, and being a part of the Marvel Universe was huge. But then also getting to portray something that was so different than Joanna and not a villain for once was really nice." Next question, they ask, "Mental illness is a huge part of who David Holler is. What did you want to dig into when it comes to having a full understanding of that aspect of his life?" She says, "For the show, you need to know that David, even though he is one of the most powerful mutants in this universe, also has serious struggles, and they do come from his mother. The way we as a society stigmatize mental illness is sad. I think it'd be much better if there was a lot more talk about it and free, open talk about it instead of making it so taboo. What you're seeing with Gabrielle is a lot of the things that David tries to hide. You see them very clearly in Gabrielle. The Gabrielle that you're going to see in the beginning of the season is her true self. That's the person that you see when you close the door and you have to flip the light switch 2 times before you exit the bathroom. I personally do that. You're seeing the real raw essence of how it is to live with that, and I think it's important because David lives with that too. We focus so much on mutant side of him that he gets from his father and not the broken part of him that actually makes him a whole person. The next question was, with Professor X being so important to everything X-Men and your character is such a big part of his story, is there anything that you were most concerned about making sure that you got right? She says, this is an alternate version, but in the comic, you see this very strong side of Gabrielle Haller. She's a powerhouse, she's a lawyer, she fights for human rights, and she does a lot of things. But here, you actually get to see the real frail version of her. When I read that was what we were going, where we were going at, for me, it was just important to make her a real person and give her a real life. So for Marvel and for fans of Legion, I thought it was my job to give her real life.
Like that. She's doing a great job, and I think it's interesting that she refers to her character as Gabrielle Haller, because we weren't sure that was her last name. Maybe she's wrong, but...
Mm-hmm. I don't know, she seems to have some familiarity with the comic and the character in the comic. I don't know if she just was familiar with it before. Maybe she did some research when she got the role, or she was just a big fan anyway. But I know that's how they talk about her in the comic, as Gabrielle Haller. So I don't know if that's what her...
I've never even seen Mr. Robot.
I was about to say that, like, man, she sure pricks her project, because if there's, like, the three most mind-bending shows that I can think of on television right now are Mr. Robot, Westworld, and Legion.
Oh, gosh, I need to watch that then. I want to.
Yeah, Mr. Robot really similar to Legion, plays with your concept of what's real, what's fantasy, what's in the
mental illness
head,
kind of thing.
He's also mental. Yeah, he's got mental illness, and there's addiction, and it's real good. It loses its way a little bit in season two, but season three was real strong. So
she's in Westworld.
No, I was just saying that, like, of the three mind melting projects like, she's in two of them. Yeah, and very different characters, because she's very villainous in Mr. Robot, and she's very virtuous, and so far in Legion.
So far,
add another show to my never ending list. That's for sure. So next item is just a quick little item from the wrap. So this isn't directly related to Legion. However, it was some news for Noah Hawley and Fargo. So Fargo season 4 has rounded out its cast. This last Thursday, they named 12 new members who will join previously announced star Chris Rock. So the cast is led by Jack Houston, Jason Schwartzman, and Ben Whishaw, along with Jesse Buckley, Salvatore Esposito, Andrew Bird, Jeremy Harris, who is from Legion, he plays Potonomy, Gaetano Bruno, Angie White, Francesco Aquarelli, I'm sorry if I'm butchering these names, Emery Crutchfield, and Amber Midthunder, who is the female Carrie, will be joining. Yeah, so the 4th season of Fargo will travel back to the 1950s. That's all I'm going to say. I hope that's not too spoilery for anyone. But they will begin production this fall in Chicago. It will air on FX in 2020. Joel and Ethan Coen, along with Warren Littlefield, will serve as executive producers. So super excited for that. I'm a big Fargo fan and everything Noah Hawley, so I was excited for that news just prior to Comic-Con this last week. So that's it for the news.
Yeah, I think we're going to do a roundup of Comic-Con on the Bald Move TV episode this week, and it's like too much to put our hands around. There's so much information came out on and around there.
I know.
All the best shows, yeah.
Okay, that's it for the news. Let's move on to mental notes, a.k.a. listener responses.
Mofavo says, remember in season 1 where all we ever did was keep track of Sid's hands? Howley set us up, or set that scene up perfectly. It was all there on rewatch. Yeah, you mentioned that too, Jason. And he, like, just when we stopped there, they hit us with the okie doke.
were you anticipating that as she reached for his face?
Well, I knew that she was doing something. But I had no until as she was reaching up, I'm like, oh crap, she took off her gloves. But I was like, I caught it like a half second before it was obvious, but
right.
I don't think there's any prizes for that.
Right. Well, you'd win first prize over my second, because I was like, why is he recoiling? Oh.
Oh.
Oh, the whole switch thing. Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it makes it really interesting. I'm really, what the hell happened to Sid? I mean, it's like, did he wipe her memory? Is she trapped as we saw her there in David's mind with his personalities?
She seemed paralyzed or catatonic.
Yeah.
At the end there. Yeah.
Just unresponsive. And if she's like, if she's somehow trapped in his consciousness, in his mind, whatever, with all of his personalities, it seemed to, at least the visual that we got, as she's surrounded by all of his personalities going, we are legion. and then it seemed like he was able to switch back. Like, he had her powers. And that's where it was kind of weird, where it was kind of going comic booky twist. You know, Aaron, you mentioned Lenny. Is she being absorbed into David? Did Sydney's powers somehow get absorbed into David, that he, because it looked like he was able to touch her and switch back into his own body. I don't know. Anyway, that was just a few questions I had.
Maybe he can do that now. That's how it works in the comics. He gets their powers,
which suggests an interesting in game with the switch dilemma.
Exactly.
She's not strong enough to do the things he wants to do. David's a god.
He absorbs her powers, kills her, absorbs her powers, or somehow absorbs her powers. I don't know if he has a killer.
They only have one watch.
Yeah.
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 Laura Willie Swink says, wow, I'm constantly amazed by the meticulous work done on Legion, from the experimental visuals to the surreal soundscapes and sensual set designs. It feels less like a television series and more like performance art, especially this season. I was bummed when Lenny died, but then I reasoned to myself that she's been dead before, and as David said, no one is ever really dead, especially not on this show. I'm glad we finally got to see David's Legion, but not sure they've adequately explained his condition the way it's explained in the comics. Is this just what happens to an Omega-level mutant when they have mental instability and dissociative identity disorder? And if so, why have we never seen any of the personalities come out? I'm thinking James McAvoy in Split. But they all stay contained inside David's mind. I'm still confused about Farouk. Is he helping Division 3? Is he sabotaging them? I still don't understand why Switch is against him and still supporting David, but I am content to just watch and bathe in the sheer luxury and enigma of it, and then listen to you three try to deconstruct this Jackson Pollock of a show. But by the way, I really enjoyed the reappearance of Aaron this season. He has some great insights and also plays so well off of Jason Arima. Cheers, Lara.
You're here.
That's very, very sweet of you, Lara. Thank you.
I agree with that.
Absolutely.
Those are really great observations. I want to just jump into something that she said when she says, why have we never seen any of the personalities come out? I don't know that we haven't. I was thinking last episode, David said to Lenny, he says, because this is my time, this is David's time, and he's got things to do. How do we know that wasn't one of his personalities? Because all of his other personalities in his head, when they're talking to Sid, call him David, but they don't call themselves David. They call themselves Legion. Maybe they have shown themselves. We just didn't know it, because he referred to himself
could
in the
be
third person there.
Definitely in this episode, he wasn't in there, and so his other personalities wrested control away from Sid. And so, yeah, we did see that this episode, but maybe it could also be just that, you know, if he's there, then he's dominant. But yeah, you're right. Maybe we've seen it before and didn't know it. All right, that's our show, episode 24. Thanks for listening, everyone. It's always blue. If you want to get in touch, you can email or send a voice message to us at legion@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
And be sure to check all our other great shows at baldmove.com and podcastica.com.
Woo! All right, that's our show.
See ya.
Thanks for listening, especially you, Daddy. Destroying.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.